Your education, where did you first go to grade school?
It was called Holy Innocence, I-N-N-O-C-E-N-T-S. That parish was named after the babies that Herod killed looking for Jesus. When Jesus, remember that story in the Bible?
Of course, right.
Where Herod had all the boys in Bethlehem, that area, he had those babies killed because he was after the baby Jesus after everything that had happened. And those babies were called the Holy Innocents. And that was the parish I grew up in. Went to kindergarten through eighth grade there. Walked 100 feet across the playground into the side door of the school, and that's where I grew up. I later went to McBride High School, which was a Catholic all-boys high school in St. Louis that was known for pretty good academics. You had to have good grades in 7th, 8th grade to get in there. I had four years there. I played basketball there. Went out for the baseball team, got cut. Played basketball for a couple of years. My big claim to fame was I was a pretty good gym hockey player because we had all gone crazy about hockey. One day in a hockey game, intramurals, I scored 8 goals against the homeroom of my math teacher, and I failed math that semester. I think I probably deserved to fail, but it was a great old place up on North Kings Highway up in North St. Louis. And the neighborhood was deteriorating. It was getting a little dangerous up there. For 4 years, I rode the city bus, about a 20-minute ride straight north from my house up to McBride High School. And to this day, I'm still really close to about 4 or 5 of my guys I graduated with. Several of them are still in St. Louis. One's up in Illinois. But we were in each other's weddings and, you know, great friends over the years. And in fact, 2 of them come down here every year to play in a charity golf tournament that Debbie and I help out Operation Hope with. And they stay an extra day and we play a little more golf. So, that was a great high school experience. Going to an all-boys school, you can imagine, you know, how crazy at times that was. And then I went to the University of Missouri, St. Louis for 2.5 years, trying to decide what I was going to do with my life and my career. I got interested in broadcasting. The University of Missouri in Columbia had a great journalism school and still does. The size of that J school kind of scared me off a little bit. There were like over 500 kids in that school at that time, and I heard you couldn't even dream about getting on the air until you were a senior. So then I heard about UMKC, University of Missouri, Kansas City, and they had a smaller radio, TV, film department, had about 75 kids in it. Long story short, I transferred up there for the winter semester in 1974 after 2.5 years in St. Louis in college. Had a great 2 years in Kansas City. I got to work on local radio stations almost immediately. And here's a weird twist to the whole thing. UMKC was pretty much a commuter school. It's much more different now. It has big dorms. They had one dorm. Transferring up there over the Christmas holidays, I couldn't get into the dorm. They had no openings. There was a Jesuit school, Catholic school across the street called Rockhurst College, which is now called Rockhurst University. They took all the overflow from UMKC, and I lived in their dorm. So I lived in a different dorm than the school I was going, but they were literally, the campuses were right across the street from each other. And it was at Rockhurst where I first got on the air as a disc jockey. And then I saw they had a basketball team, they had a soccer team, they had a baseball team. They were an NAIA school. UMKC was like Division III. They didn't have that many teams. So I went to the manager of the radio station. I said, hey, has anybody ever broadcast any of the teams that you have on campus? And he's like, no, what are you thinking? And again, long story short, the radio station was in the basement of one of the dorms that was right next to the baseball field. The soccer field was right next to the baseball field. We would literally plug a cable into the board at the radio station, run hundreds of feet of that cable across the baseball field, up the bleachers, and I would sit in the top row of the bleachers with a clipboard, I didn't even have an earpiece. I didn't know if we were on the air or not. I just assumed we were. A handheld microphone, and that's how I announced my first sporting events, was doing soccer at Rockhurst College.
That's great.
And then later, soccer would get me on ESPN. It got me the job with the Roughnecks. And I ultimately did two World Cups for ESPN, which is kind of appropriate because we're recording this at the time of the year when the World Cup's being played. Right. But that's how I got started in play-by-play, was at Rockhurst College, a school I wasn't even attending.
But you said you got interested in broadcasting. What was that? How was that sparked?
I can answer that very directly. When I was 14 years old in 1967, my sister Judy got a job with the Cardinals in St. Louis. She was the secretary of group sales. All of a sudden, we had two tickets for every home game. I wore that ballpark out. It was allowed by mom and dad, and a lot of times it was with my little sister Mary, we would take the public bus downtown from our neighborhood down to the ballpark, they were in the downtown stadium by then. They had moved in 1966. A year later, Judy gets that job. And I tell you, John, I just went crazy over baseball. Judy always had some duties that she would have to wrap up when the game was over. I'd go stand out in the lobby by the elevator where the players came up from the clubhouses downstairs to exit the stadium. Every night I would see Kenny Boyer walk out of there, one of my heroes. He was the MVP of the World Series in 1964 when the Cardinals beat the Yankees. I got to meet Lou Brock. Bob Gibson was on that team. And the Cardinals won the pennant in 67, Judy's first year. They beat the Red Sox in the World Series. The next year, they won the pennant again, lost Game 7 at home to the Tigers in the 1968 World Series. I was in the stands that day with a girl from Xavier High School that I was trying to impress. I took her to a World Series game. It was one of our first dates. And we lost. I couldn't believe it. I was like, there's no way. We got Bob Gibson pitching today. This big old portly left-hander of the Tigers, guy named Mickey Lolich, he beat the Cardinals 3 games in that series. He beat Bob Gibson that day. It was a heartbreaker. And then in 1969, when I was 16, I could get a job at the ballpark. You had to be 16 to work there. I got a job as an usher. I could sometimes see the game and sometimes I couldn't. But on my break, I would go up on the ramp in center field where I could see the whole field in front of me. And I'd probably be leaning up against one of those pillars. And there were no seats up there. They were all down below, but people would be walking by. And John, up on that ramp, I pretended I was Jack Buck announcing the Cardinal games. And that's when I first started doing play-by-play. I was 16, wearing my silly-looking Andy Frayn, you know, usher's outfit with the funny cap on, the white shirt, the black tie, the blue pants with the yellow and red stripe on the side, and my clip-on tie. And that's where I first started doing play-by-play, was up on that ramp watching the Cardinals back then.
In your mind, you were doing play-by-play.
Yeah. Now, if I would do it out loud a little bit, but if I saw people coming, then I would shut up, and I'm just kind of doing it to myself. But I think our break lasted 20 minutes. I would make good use of that 20 minutes. And, you know, it's funny, the little things you remember. Up on the very top level of the stadium, it was called the Upper Terrace. There was a concession stand up there, and we made $11.80 a night for ushering the ball games. I think it came out to like $2.75 an hour, something like that. There was a lady up there who loved all the young people who worked at the ballpark. So, you know, if you're on your break and you got a soda and a hot dog, well, there goes like $3 out of your $11 that, you know, that you're making that night. And so there was this wonderful lady up on the top level. And if you would go there in your usher's outfit and order a hot dog and a soda, she would give you the soda and then she would put two hot dogs in the bun. So we got to eat two hot dogs for the price of one, thanks to that wonderful old lady. I don't know what her name was. I just remember that. You know, it was interesting because one night your assignment might be the men's room. We were supposed to follow people in there, you know, And then just kind of walk out. They had some vandalism in some of the. So one night you might be working there, and the next night you might be working down on the field, you know, like in the bullpen where the players were. I ushered at Busch Stadium all through high school, all through college, along with that summer job at the shipyard. So I ended up ushering at the ballpark for seven seasons from 1969 up until 1975 or so. And by that time I was graduating from college and I was too old. You know, you can't be ushering at the ballpark making that kind of money. So, you know, that's where the whole baseball thing kind of took root for me with, you know, and the rest of broadcasting really kind of along with it.
Absolutely.